friends, and welcome back to What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend, business partner, and co-host,
Alice Slater. I'm so many things to you.
You really are. Aww. I didn't even list all of them. I just chose three. I'm happy to be chatting to you today, my friend.
Once again, glad to be back in the hot seat.
It's nice to have our little weekly chats, isn't it?
I love it. I love it.
And, you know, we got some nice feedback on last week's ep, talking about our writing habits. So
yes,
I'm feeling...
Thank you so much to everyone who messaged and said they enjoyed it. It's just nice to know that we're not just spitting into the wind, you know?
So true. And we are not. We are very much not. So, yeah, we appreciate every little tweet and message and whatever that we get about our little pod.
I was going to say, have you had a good reading week?
Yes. So when we last spoke... I had just started reading a new book and I just finished that last night, which was the nonfiction crimey book that I mentioned about Native Americans and white people stealing their land and murdering them for their oil. And that was so good. Like, I literally cannot recommend this book enough. It is called The Killers of the Flower Moon by David Grann. And now that I've finished it, I am officially stamping it with my seal of recommendation. I learned so much. It is so interesting, but also very thrilling as a plot, even though it's nonfiction. You're reading it and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. So I would love to see a fictionalized version of this book at some point. But yeah, who knows? That seems like it would be quite a strange little prospect. How about you? What are you reading?
So I have read a book called A Crooked Tree by Una Mannion, which
yes.
came out at the end of January from Faber. And basically it's got a thriller vibe, you know, but I would also compare it to stuff like Marlena by Julie Bunton and...
Throwback favorite yeah. of the pod.
The Burning Girl by Claire Massoud. You know, these books about like long hot summers, teenage girls going wild, going missing.
I do.
But this one's a little bit different. Basically, it opens with a family packed into a car. There's like five teenage children and a very frazzled mother. And the second youngest kid starts playing up and being a pain in the ass. And she just snaps, stops the car and tells her to get out. And they're like 6 miles away from home. And then they drive away and leave her. And basically, it just kind of snowballs from there. Something happens to her on the way home, which kind of kicks off the rest of the book. It's really good. It's quite long for what it
yes.
is. If I had to be brutally honest, it wouldn't be in my top 10 of the year, just because I felt like I had to spend quite a long time with this family for ultimately a plot that was quite straightforward.
Yeah.
So it's like a lukewarm recommendation.
Yeah,
your average reader. But if you love those kinds of books, it's one to pick up.
This is a very good little nutshell.
I think that's fair. And there's a lot in it that I really loved. Like, it's set in, I think it's either the late 70s or the 80s. I think maybe the 80s. Like, it has a soundtrack of AC/DC and the Rolling Stones and Susie and the Banshees, which I really liked. It's got lots of like punk rocker kids. There's loads to love. And there is like the antagonist is this guy, a creepy guy called Barbie Man. And oh, it's just so horrible. I loved it.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like it has enough to like about it.
Yeah, I would say so.
It seems like it has a similar spirit to Cat Step by Alison Irvine, which I really liked last year, about, you know, a stressed out mom and then things spiral from a fairly minor little decision. So maybe you would enjoy that.
It does. It has like, this one is more of a coming of age. And I think like there is this whole, the theme of the book is the narrator is what, the second oldest child or middle child, sorry. So she's like 14. And a big theme of the book is how she interprets adult behavior around her.
Mm.
And the problem with it is that they just, all the adults kind of blur together.
Yeah.
So there were lots of B plots about affairs and failing marriages, but from a 14-year-old's perspective, it just
is not well differentiated. Yeah, because mm-hmm. as a 14-year-old, you don't necessarily understand like the differences and nuances of what's different people's circumstances and situations are.
Which is kind of the point. I just think with a book this long, I couldn't necessarily, by the time I got to the end, I couldn't really remember what the significant, insignificant moments were that had led to various conclusions.
Yeah.
But that might have also just been my reading experience. Like, by reading it slowly, the book suffered.
True. Well, yeah, I have not really heard a ton of chat about this book, so I'm very interested to hear about it. Thank you for telling me this, Alice.
You're welcome, Bert.
So, we have gossip a little time. We have a little chat to have, do we not?
Yeah, gossip time. I wanted to talk about, so my original idea had been for us to just talk about our life cycle of books in our homes, but then I've ended up in a little library rabbit hole, and I feel like maybe this is just going to be the whole chat.
Yes, we may spend 40 minutes talking about this one tweet.
Yeah, okay, so a few days ago on twitter.com, a bookseller called Olivia in Bristol tweeted a picture of her little library. So it's essentially a free book box. It's beautifully painted in like a sage green. It's got glass panels. It's like a really fancy one. I have a little shoebox sized one in my front garden that's lovingly made for me by my brother-in-law. This one is like the Taj Mahal in comparison. So basically she tweeted it and it went viral. And I discovered in Googling little library viral tweet that this happens about once every 3 to 6 months. That like one book box is particularly nice and ends up going viral. So it's really nothing new or special. But people are really mad about it. And I thought we could discuss that.
Yes, I have strong opinions on this, unsurprisingly. Good. Because obviously what you kind of haven't said is that the reason that people are mad about it is that like library Twitter is mad about the use of the word library in this instance and is kind of taking out their frustration at the defunding of libraries on this lady, right?
Yeah, so I actually have a quote from a library campaigner, which I thought would be pertinent to share because I think it sums up a lot of the energy on Twitter. So Joanna Booth says, "A community library is more than a box of books. It is a statutory provision that is gradually being defunded and offloaded to community groups. Over 800 have been shut since 2010, and the budget for Bristol libraries has been halved. Most Bristol libraries don't even have full-time opening hours outside of lockdown. Our public library services are disappearing, and calling boxes of books a community library does affect our perception of statutory services that are at risk." So that's the energy. And I feel like it's hard to disagree with the sentiment that libraries are important and they are being dramatically underfunded and have been for decades.
Yeah, like, 100%. That's, completely
that's
agree.
True.
But that sounds like a austerity conservative government problem and a council problem. That doesn't sound like a random person having a book box problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure that calling book boxes little libraries, which also, by the way, was not invented by this woman. Obviously, the Little Library Project has existed for like, let me see how long. Yeah, the Little Free Library Project has existed for a really long time. There's a website, littlefreelibrary.org, where you can find out more about the project. But I don't think that this is a hook to hang like the tragic loss of libraries onto.
It's feeling like a reach to me, I've just got to say. It just feels like a reach. And it feels like completely true. It feels like something that's completely true, but the energy and the anger is being directed at the wrong person.
Exactly. And I feel like it's an issue of semantics. Like I saw one tweet, this guy basically listed everything that libraries do, and it included mental health services. And I was like, but this isn't right. Librarians are not trained to be mental health, what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, like a mental health professional.
Yeah, librarians are not trained as mental health professionals.
So true. Yeah, because something that I always thought about a lot was when I lived in Walthamstow, which is a place we will probably be talking about again in this episode because of the amount of little free libraries in Walthamstow. I volunteered at a night shelter for people who did not have homes to sleep in. I did the breakfast shift because, as we know, I don't like being up late at night, but I don't mind getting up early. So I would get up early and I would go to the shelter and I would serve breakfast and make sure everyone was up and out. And the place that basically for the people who did not have jobs to go to, because a lot of them did, the two places, once we asked them to vacate at 7:30 in the morning, the two places that people went to if they didn't have jobs to go to were McDonald's or the library. Like, that was where people were going to go. McDonald's was already open. And then once they'd been at McDonald's long enough, they would then go to the library. And that's, you know, kind of symptomatic of not having anywhere else to be that is warm and indoors, and another symptom of bloody Tory austerity. And I don't think it's good that librarians are having to take on this role of like marshalling homeless people who have nowhere else to be during the day. So I don't really get why that's then being kind of thrown at this random woman for having a book box, because they're having to deal with like stuff that they should never have been trained to do.
Exactly, exactly. And like, I think the kind of crux of it is books. It shouldn't be, we shouldn't be pinning anything else onto the book boxes other than whether or not it's good for libraries and the book industry, which is obviously like one and the same. All of the other stuff that libraries do, like, I don't think that necessarily comes under the definition of a library. Like, I can call the books in my study my library if I want to. It doesn't mean that I'm providing a community service. And, you know, I just, the whole thing's fucking ridiculous. It's a ridiculous thing to conflate.
Yeah, and it's like, do these people who are tweeting this genuinely think this woman perceives herself to be a librarian? Like, I just...
People do call themselves... I have seen someone tweet about being a librarian for her own little book box, and I saw loads of snark about that. And I just think it's semantics. Like, calm down. Do you know what I mean? Like, this woman is a bookseller. Like, she does work in the industry. She is aware of what these words mean. I don't feel that calling a box of free books in her front garden a library is eroding the meaning of the term library. I don't think anyone is going to start feeling confused about what a library is for.
Or feeling less angry that they don't have a library. Like, that, people who wish that their library worked, that their local community library was open at the right times, was staffed by experts, was like well stocked, had, you know, facilities that people need to use, I don't feel less angry about the loss of that in my community because somebody is providing secondhand books for free. Like, I just, those things are so completely different to me.
Exactly. And I feel like it's just one, like, aspect of the ways in which books get recycled.
Yeah, and it's a good way.
Exactly, that's all it is. It's a form of recycling. And also, I mean, right now, charity shops are closed, libraries are closed, bookshops are closed. It's very difficult to access reading material. And obviously, you could have a whole different conversation about whether or not a box of books like this is safe during a pandemic. We actually know that like transmission via touch is quite low, so I'm not that concerned about that.
Agree.
It's just a nice thing to do. It's just nice. It's just
a nice thing to do.
Just let people do nice things. And if you want to campaign about the loss of funding to libraries, maybe this isn't the best hook to hang your hat on, because it kind of makes a lot of the people mouthing off about this sound a bit ridiculous.
So yeah, I'm very on board with the free library lifestyle, or the free book box lifestyle, which I may have to start calling it so I don't get moided on the internet.
Yeah, maybe just for the sake of not ruining my life via annoying comments I don't care about, I'll just call them book boxes.
It's a book box.
I guess that is the other thing. It's like, okay, I literally couldn't give a fuck. I think language evolves, but the use of library in this situation, it's not being misappropriated. I think it's fine. But also, I like a quiet life, so book box it is.
Yeah, and I just wonder if the only beef with it, like if this woman had done exactly the same tweet but called it a book box, would there have been any beef about it? Is it literally purely semantic? Because that's what it feels like to me. It does feel like if she'd called it a book box, there would not have been such a pushback.
Yeah, I think it's purely semantic. Purely semantic.
Pure ideology.
I haven't seen anyone bitching about providing free books to your community.
Interesting, isn't it?
And I mean, obviously, I think I definitely have in my time come across conversations about book boxes as being like, oh God, like a middle class vanity thing. You know, like by placing a box of books in your front garden, it's like a fun little thing for you to show off about like how important books are to you, when giving them to charity would benefit charities more, or like donating them to libraries rather than just giving them away for free. But I mean,
the end effect is still the same. Like, why are people so bothered about this? Like, the end effect is still the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think providing free books for people, however you choose to do it, is a nice thing and a good thing. And I think, like, most of us read books and then pass them on, right? Pass them on to our friends and family, or give them to charity shops to be sold on. Like, it's just one step in a life cycle of a book. Books should constantly be in motion. They shouldn't be sat on your shelves forever unless they're, you know, special or particular to you. And I'm saying that with a big caveat, because obviously books for me are fluid. Like, I get sent a lot of books for free. They're something that I can afford to spend my money on. So, you know, I don't want to make anyone feel bad for keeping hold of books, because they're yours, they're possessions. You do what you want with them.
Do what you want with them.
And that includes putting them in a free book box. Thank you.
Tell me about your, I'm very interested in your life as a book box possessor. Tell me about this.
Call yourself the book box caretaker.
Yes.
Is that acceptable?
The book box marshal, yes.
Yeah. So my brother-in-law made me a little book box a few years ago. I painted it and I put it on my front wall. It's like nailed down to a little stake. Within 24 hours, it was broken. The little latch was ripped right off. And, you know, I've had ups and downs with it. I've never posted a picture of it online because I don't want to advertise where I live. Which is the other thing with this woman's book box. I'm like, hun, if you go on holiday, like, do not tweet. Don't tweet till you're back, because everyone knows what your house looks like now. Yeah, so I don't put mine online for that reason. But yeah, I've had some ups and downs with it. We had a period of time where someone was just emptying it every single day, just taking every single book, regardless of what it was. Well, it was frustrating, because I reasoned, this was way before the pandemic, this was about 2 years ago. And I reasoned, like, maybe it's someone who is just skint and it's taking them and selling them. And I'm not going to judge someone for doing that. But what was irritating is that I kept finding damaged books tossed into people's front gardens.
Ugh.
So they were obviously just taking everything and then shuffling through as they walked and just chucking anything they didn't want. And that was really annoying, because obviously it's misusing the box, but also it's littering the fucking neighborhood. Like, just don't take the stuff that is obviously damaged. Like, a book with a ripped cover is still perfectly readable,
yeah,
but it's not necessarily sellable. So that was annoying, but I left a little note requesting that people just take what they want and leave stuff for other people. And then I got loads of other notes on top of my note from people in the community saying that they love the book box and they're frustrated. Aww. It's always empty. And yeah, it was really nice. And then it stopped for a while, and then about a year later it started again, and I was like, god damn it. And I have loads and loads of books, because I get sent so many, and there's no other way to get rid of them right now. So I filter them out through my book box, but it was just a bit frustrating burning through, you know, when there's no other way for people to get hold of free books during the pandemic. It was annoying to see it constantly empty. And then one of my neighbors caught someone with a bag for life, emptying the box. And she told me that she'd asked him what he was doing. And he said, well, I'm donating them to charity, because it's a waste. That's what it's for. And she was like, yeah, but the charity shops are shut right now. And he was all self-righteous, and he bustled off with his fucking bag of books. So I left another note out explaining, you know, that this is what I'm doing for my community. And I also donate clothing, I donate things to charity. You're welcome to take a book, read it, and then donate it to charity. But find your own way to be philanthropic. Don't just ruin my thing and ruin the community's thing in the kind of some misguided sense of doing the right thing. And
so
that has now stopped as well. The box is banging, it's full, there's a constant cycle going on. If we find anti-vax literature, we throw it in the bin. Everyone's having a good time.
See, this just sounds like a good old time, especially in a panny D, where it's not as easy to give and receive free books or
and
cheap
tell
books.
Me about your relationship with book box over the years.
So the area that I live in has like a book box, but it's not very well used, so I just ignore it. But I lived between 2016 and 2019 in Walthamstow, which is a very book box centric area. And yeah, I think there is maybe something to be said about the overlap of low traffic neighborhoods and book boxes. And we know that, you know, low traffic neighborhoods are often used as a tool for segregating areas where white middle class people live. And there probably is a higher incidence of book boxes in those areas. So I think it's fine to acknowledge that. So the route that I used to walk to the station would take me past a couple of book boxes, and I had my favorite one, and I would give and receive to that box semi-regularly. That's my story. I think someone who lived in the area worked for a publisher that I will not name, because there were often like finished copies that were clearly unread. Like I got the whole Patrick Melrose omnibus, which had like the spine was completely unbroken, from my favorite book box.
But that, yeah, that is something else that I think is interesting about them, is that there are good ones and not so good ones.
So if you do live in that area, I would say that the best book box is on Wingfield Road. It's like near the corner of Wingfield Road and Randolph Road. So if you live in Walthamstow, and obviously my information is now like 2 years old because I haven't lived in that area since October 2019. So it may have declined in good vibes books, but in my day, that was my fave little book box. And I'd often find stuff walking to and from work that I was like, oh my God, like I would love to read this book.
And did you hear about the one on Ruby Road?
No.
There was this book box on Ruby Road.
That... Another road. I used to live in that area of Walthamstow, and I would walk up Ruby Road every day on my way to the station once again.
Would you really?
Yes.
Why would you end up by Lloyd Park?
I used to live on the other side of Lloyd Park, remember? When I lived near your mom.
Oh, no, I forgot that you had two different flats in...
I did.
Walthamstow. Yeah, so that one. It got stolen.
The whole box?
Yeah, the whole box. That box has been there for the entire time that my mom has lived in Walthamstow. So it's like since at least 2006, 2007. Someone nicked the whole thing.
That's absurd.
And
why?
It's so mad because it's so old. It was like really starting to like... The paint was all flaking. It was all like... It was getting really worn out, so they needed a replacement. But why steal that? Like, it was...
What are you even stealing? You're stealing some, like, rotten wood. Like, that's so weird.
Some rotten wood and, like, a bunch of old proofs. Like, what the fuck? So, yeah, I'm sad. Absolute that was my wild. Oldest. That was my first experience of book boxes, and it's gone.
Yeah, me too. I think that was my first one as well, because obviously when I lived in that area, that was my... the one I would walk past all the time. That is wild. That is very bad.
In conclusion, I love anything that helps recycle books and keep books that keep their life cycle going for as long as possible. So I'm very pro book boxes, but I will concede that perhaps calling them libraries annoys too many people for it to be worth my while. And also, like, I just don't like to see the conversation about libraries being like weirdly tacked onto something that doesn't matter, because it makes it seem like the conversation doesn't matter.
Here's a little cue, a quick little cue for you.
Do you
personally, as Alice Slater, put proofs in your book box?
So I don't, for the basic reason that we're not supposed to.
Yeah, same. That was always my vibe. Like, yeah. I'm not going to be the king that decides that I personally am going to do that. If other people want to do that, I cannot tell them what to do. But I, as Bethany Rutter, chose to not do that.
I mean, I feel like it's really contentious. So the story with proofs, if it's a finished copy, so like an advanced review copy, that's fine. It's a real book, it's done.
If it has a barcode, proof, basically.
Yeah, if it has a barcode, it's fine. If it's an early proof, so no barcode, no front cover, or sometimes they have a nice cover, but it's not the finished cover. Or it could even be a finished cover, but with no barcode. Then it's a proof and it's not the finished book. So there is still room for things to change. Things can be removed. There could be spelling mistakes. It's essentially still a working draft. And lots of authors really, really hate to see their proofs out in the world. They're made to be read, but they're not made to be read by the public. So yeah, it is also technically, it's illegal to resell them. Like, they say not for sale on them, but I feel like it's illegal in the same way that it's like, it's illegal to record Coronation Street from your, you know, like, it's not, that's like the oldest, maddest example I could have found for like something that's illegal, but doesn't matter.
Yes.
But anyway, whatever. But I also, I mean, realistically though, they are not kept under lock and key. Like, when you get sent a proof, it has to be a really special book for that proof to be like registered in your name. Like, I once got sent a Stephen King book with a letter explaining that the proof was numbered, my name and address had been recorded, and if it turned up on eBay, I would be in trouble. Like, that was spicy and fun. That's literally happened. That's the only time that has ever happened to me in a decade of being a bookseller and proof receiver. On the whole, they don't really matter. They get they get passed around like fucking confetti. They end up everywhere. So I think it's a little bit precious to act as though it's like this sacred thing that shouldn't be seen by like public eyes, because they are seen by members of the public all the time. So yeah, out of respect for that, I don't book box them, but I do pass them on to pals.
Yeah, I think that's not unreasonable, I guess.
And if that makes me a bad person, then I apologize.
Yeah, and I think it's also just like, as an author, do you want something that isn't the finished thing circulating as if it... Because I think part of the problem is also that a proof to many people that, you know, if you go into a charity shop, you see a book, you buy it, it has a proof cover on it, but like, what does that really mean to you? So you're reading it as if it's the finished copy, and like, even we're reading it as if it's the finished copy, and we know it's not. Yeah, I guess it's just like, do you want your book being read that widely as if it is the real thing, like being bought and sold as if it is the finished version of your book?
So the thing is, I think that of course no author wants that. That makes total sense. But then those copies, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't really understand why the industry pretends as though this is public knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, most everyone in the industry or adjacent to the industry knows what a proof is, can recognize a proof, and can tell the difference between a proof and a finished copy. But I don't feel like you inherently can if you don't already know that information. It's not printed on the book. Like, it will say not for quotation, and it will say not for resale in small like caveat letters on the back, but I don't think that that necessarily means that much. You know, like, I don't know.
It's another one of those things. It's, yeah, I feel like it's another one of those things that like, I don't do it, but I also am not like super mad about it.
Yeah, I feel like if the proofs already are in circulation, I understand not selling them. But you know, like, people get really angry when they see proofs of bestsellers on eBay, for example. Just to be totally clear, I don't mean before the book has come out.
Yeah, I think that's a big...
That is different.
Yeah, I agree. I think if things are being sold as if they're the finished copy before it's come out, that's a problem. But if they're just being sold afterwards, I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah, because I just... after the fact, when the real edition is out there, I don't know, I can't help but feel like it's not a great place to be in to be judging people for trying to earn a few quid. And like, booksellers and reviewers tend to earn fuck all, so it doesn't surprise me that they may sell the shit they get sent for free as an extra income. I feel like if this is something that's really a problem in the industry, then we could possibly be doing more on the physical book to make it clear that that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. You know? In answer to my original question, you don't put them in the book box, but you're also not super wild about the vibes, as with many things.
As with many things. I'm not wild about the vibe, but I'll do it. And that's that on that.
That's that on that, indeed. Yeah, that, I think what to do with proofs is like quite an annoying element in my life, because, you know, I cleared out a lot of books a couple of weeks ago because we just get sent a lot and they're often not things that we've asked for, which is completely fine. It's hard to talk about this stuff without sounding like a brat, because obviously it's just delightful to receive books, but also they do take up physical space, and we do exist on the physical plane. We have not yet ascended to the astral plane. So they do take up space in my home, of which there is a finite amount. So yeah, it's a situation. And given that we do generally get sent proofs rather than finished copies, it is then a bit like, what should I do with this stuff? Because, you know, whenever you ask online, what do I do with proofs that I'm not going to read, or I have read and I don't plan to read again, the answer is to recycle them. That's the answer you get. That's my take.
That to me feels quite taboo.
Like, yeah.
My husband is a library assistant, and before that he was a bookseller. So, you know, we have conversations about this kind of thing all the time. And we kind of agree that if a proof has been read to the degree that it's disintegrating, we don't feel bad recycling it. But it feels really taboo to recycle a perfectly readable copy of a book. It feels really taboo. And I know the author Lizzie Huxley Jones,
yes,
has said that they think of them as like just manuscripts. It's just a bound manuscript. You wouldn't think twice about recycling printouts if you didn't need them anymore. And you should adopt the same view of a proof, which I think is a really helpful way to think of it. But it does still feel taboo.
Yeah. Like, I did this big clear out of my books a few weeks ago. And the proofs that I do not want to keep, they're still just sitting in piles in my living room. Like, they're not on my shelves anymore, but they're just sitting in piles because I cannot bring myself to recycle them. So I just don't know what I'm going to do with them.
And then I guess the question is as well, like, I know that some booktubers and bookstagrammers give them away, but I don't really understand the difference between if I do a giveaway with a proof that I don't want, how is that different from putting it in my book box? I suppose on the one hand, doing a giveaway online is giving that book a bit of online buzz. It's giving it some attention, which is what a proof is for. But materially, it's going to end up with someone who's not necessarily a reviewer or a bookseller or a librarian. So it's going to end up just, you know, it could end up with anyone. And so, yeah, I don't really understand the difference. Why is one okay and not the other? Or am I conflating selling proofs with passing proofs on?
It's right? A minefield. Like,
actually, is it okay to put them in the free book box because it's not selling them? It's not profiting from them?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a question we need to ask the internet and see if
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm always excited to hear from our darling friends at home, but on this occasion, I'm extremely invested in their answers because I don't know. Like, this isn't just like idly asking for people's takes. Like, I'm genuinely interested in people's opinions of everything we've talked about today. Like, are you mad about the little book box being called a library? If yes, are you a librarian? What do you think we should do with proofs if you're not in the publishing industry? If you are in the publishing industry, what do you think we should do with proofs? I want to know.
I feel like I also want to mention that one of the reasons why I have a book box is because it's a very efficient way for me to deal with the number of books I receive.
Yeah.
Before I had a book box, I would just have stuff piled up to go to charity shops, but I don't drive. My nearest charity shop is about a 15-minute walk away, 20-minute walk away. So I can't really carry a huge amount at a time or do multiple trips easily. So it was just a really easy solution to that problem. And no one is going to take that away from me, damn it.
I will not let them.
All right, cool. Well, we look forward to hearing everyone's takes. Genuinely.
Please.
Email us.
Please. Tweet us. We need your takes. We're desperate. Please give us your takes. That's like the last time you will ever hear that. we want your spicy, spicy takes. Cool. Well, I feel, you know, like we've got a lot out of our systems. And we will see you next time. You can find us on the internet. And you may not recognize us because we had a makeover, didn't we, Alice?
We did. We have a new look.
By your buddy.
You can find him on the internet at _Migs_ I think something like that. But if you go to What Page Pod on Instagram, he's tagged in our new logo post. So you can check out his work. He's really cool. He's a musician. And we're very grateful.
And a very talented graphic designer, because I love our new little logo. better than what I whipped up on Canva just so that we had something to launch with. And that was many years ago now. Because we are old ladies.
Yeah, it was time for a new look.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much, Migs, and thank you to our good friends listening at home, and we will see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.